Okay, it's time for Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit. Hey, I'm Dr. Lisa, and I give a shit. We're all very, very upset today. I know you guys are all like, I mean, this Paris Accord thing is going to be announced in an hour at the end of our show, and I just can't ignore that. And, you know, we're going to make it through together, and, you know, I'm here for you, you're here for me, and this, whatever's going to happen, we're going to stick through this. And there are too many people that believe in the right thing, except, which is not what, well, you know what the right thing is, because you're listening to this show. You can't be that dumb. So anyway, I just want to point that out, that I'm sorry that this is happening. We're all, it's horrible. It's just even emotionally horrible. I mean, even if you remove it from the actual reality of what happens to the planet and all that other stuff, it's just very dispiriting and upsetting, and we feel a lack of control that there's basically one person that can do so much evil. And that's the part that we're feeling, I think I'm feeling, and I think you may be feeling right in the moment right now. So I just want to honor that and just tell you I love you and I'm here for you, and we're all going to stick together and make it through this. So I do have some good news. And do you know what that is? Fucking A. It's Brooklyn Pride Week. How great is that? Okay. That should put a smile on everyone's face. And we've got Brooklyn Pride. Well, it's Pride Week in general, but Brooklyn Pride has some really, really great activities. Okay. So, the theme is this year is equality, no exceptions. That means you fucking freak out there. You're listening to this. You're a fucking freak. And even you are included. And it's Monday. It starts on Monday, as you may know, and it ends on Saturday, June 10th, Monday. And there's a 5K in Prospect Park. There's a festival, and there's a parade on Fifth Avenue in Park Slope. And you know what's really cool? They're having a documentary of the first openly trans FDNY firefighter. They're having queer comedy and a full day of events. That's Prospect Park on June 10th. And you should go to brooklynpride.org to learn more about what's going on there and get involved. And if you don't have to be gay, you know, you can be a freak straight like I am, it's for us. If you're listening to this show, it's for you. Believe you me, you need to be included in something. You're definitely in that category. And I also want to remind people, until I get to my really amazing guest, a musician who I have been following for forever, is on the show today. But before we get there, just want you to know that you should support. It'd be great if you support RadioFreeBrooklyn.com. That's something you can do to help. You can give us a dollar, anything. Just go to our website and go to the donate, you know, just type in donate, and we make it really easy for you to donate. So I'm very, very excited who's on the show today. It's Bill Pop of Bill Pop and the Tapes. Hi, Bill.
Hello. How are you?
Good.
I think I'm over-modulating.
Over-modulating. That is such a, that's a definitely musician radio.
Sounds like it's just, no, it's all right now. I just got to lean back a little. Maybe it could be my headphones, too.
Maybe. Are your headphones really
loud?
Well,
it just sounds like it's distorting a little. That's
maybe.
But as long as it's not, who cares?
Yeah.
I've had horrible monitors through the years.
You've had horrible what?
Monitors.
Oh, yeah.
Meaning it sounds horrible on stage and okay out in the audience.
Oh, we're good here. We have good shit. We've got really, that's one thing. The studio has good equipment, don't you think?
No, I thought it was like a on-the-air kind of radio station, not just internet. This is good.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it is really good. You know? It is really good.
I did the Roo and Who show for one time.
I know them.
She's great. Yeah. I remember when I first did it, they just kind of like, she had her laptop and the camera was a laptop, you know what I mean?
Oh yeah, no, we're way beyond that. Anyway, I want to introduce you guys to Bill Pop's music, Bill Pop and the Tapes, your band. That's what we're going to be playing in a few minutes. But I just wanted, and this is the first time Bill and I are meeting, right here. You're here with us in the moment. He just walked in the studio literally 10 minutes ago. And Bill hasn't heard the story, but Bill was actually, Bill, your album, Inside Out.
Insides. Yeah, that came out in 96.
Huge influence on me.
Really?
Yes, because that was a year that I really started making art very, very seriously.
Wow.
So I went to my advertising job during the day, and I would come home at night, and I would play that album and make art, make all this work.
Wow.
And I was just starting to really exhibit work. I had something... I had a big condom rack in the New Museum bookstore, and it had, you could buy a condom with somebody's name on it. So I was making those all the time, and tampons that said souvenir of my reproductive year. So anyway, you're part of, you know how music is, guys.
Did you make one with my name on it, of any chance?
No, I probably did. Bill was probably on there. A blue one with Bill. Some girl probably, you never had like some woman pull one out on you like that, I guess
not. I'm too old for that. You know, we have to be the aggressors.
I think
I always play that game, oh, I forgot one. anyway.
So why don't you just explain a little bit about like your style of music and what the influence is, and then I'm going to share two songs from the album Insides that really have stuck with me throughout the years.
Well, I grew up listening to Elvis, well, more Ricky Nelson. I mean, Elvis was there, and I sang Hound Dog as a kid, and then later on it was Dion was very big. Then obviously, like a lot, like anyone around my age, when the Beatles came out, everything was different. You know, when I seen them on Ed Sullivan, and I started out as a drummer when I was 13, and I never got any better than Ringo. So when the more progressive music came out, I couldn't do half of it, and I got thrown out of a band. But in all that, my mother, at the same time, I got the drum kit by that. Following Christmas, they bought my mother.
How old were you?
At that time, I was 13. I still got the 1966 Ludwigs.
Oh,
I mean, they
really?
Were faded white. They were supposed to be sky blue.
I'd love to see that.
Oh, yeah.
There's an eBay treasure.
Definitely. I mean, they're a sight for sore eyes because they got faded like this yellowish whatever.
Do you have a picture? Send us a picture.
Actually, probably online. You could. You know what? Because our drummer was using them up till about 2 years ago because they were light and small. Yeah, it was
Interesting.
It was a jazz kit, mm-hmm. and because my parents, I just told them I wanted it to look like the Ringo kit, but they didn't know what they were doing, and they bought the smaller kit, and instead of being the blue like Ringo, they got the sky blue pearl, and where I kept them in the front of the basement, there was a window there, and I kept cleaning them, and they kept looking yellow, and I don't know, it was the sun. So
your music.
Oh.
I want to get to your music.
Oh,
what's
yeah,
your influences?
Oh yeah. So anyway, it was the Beatles.
I can see this is gonna be a lot of me interrupting you.
Yeah, you're gonna have to.
That's okay. We're cool with that, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So anyway, So I started playing keyboards because of the piano being in the house. I got thrown out of a band as a drummer, and I started writing songs, and the rest is history. I just kept writing, and I formed the Tapes in the very end of '80. We did our first live show at Folk City in March. We auditioned CBGB's, I remember the date, May 10th,
that must have been
1981.
Awesome.
Well, we were scared because
the
Merv was alive then. You know, I should have, it would have been better if I would have played there in the 70s, but in the 80s, I kind of caught the tail end of the whole thing. And you know, we wanted to pass, and I think we had to play something like midnight on a Sunday. And we wanted to do a good job.
Worked.
Yeah, it worked.
So what do you call your music? British?
Yeah, British or Britpop.
British Invasion pop,
yeah.
Okay. So with that, I'm going to give you a sample. I'm going to play through two of my very favorite songs from the album Insides, which came out in 1996.
Yep.
First one is Stone to Throw, and the second is a very original cover of the Eleanor Rigby by the Beatles. By the Beatles, right?
Yes.
I mean, who sang it on the Beatles album?
Paul McCartney.
Okay.
That's a drum roll in the beginning.
Up the lights in a church where a wedding has been. Lives lives in a dream, waits at the window, wearing a face that she keeps in her jar by the door. Who is it for? Nobody there. What does he care? Church and was buried along with her name. Nobody came. Father McKenzie wiping the dirt from his hands as he walks from the grave. No one was saying.
How about that, huh? That was awesome. I really, really enjoyed that. You could tell I was enjoying
it,
right?
Yeah, I see.
Love it. I mean, I just, you know, that was so great. I remember I came to see you at the Sidewalk Cafe that year, 1996.
Oh, wow.
Do you remember that?
No.
They played there?
I
no,
remember.
Of course
well,
not.
I played there a lot, but I mean.
Yeah, and I remember this was kind of funny because I was dating the music writer for the New York Press at the time.
Was that, who was
J.R.
that?
J.R. Taylor.
Oh, you were dating Taylor?
Yeah, and it was really funny because we're still friendly. Or, you know, he has a lovely wife, a great wife, and a great kid. I mean, I don't see him or really have much to do with him.
I think he's in Jersey
now. Yeah, he lives in Weehawken. Did you ever meet him?
Well, yeah, he did a whole thing on me. Like, what happened was they had Daily News, he had this, like, some thing they did on people that make a difference or whatever, and I had a quadruple bypass, and he did this whole big full page thing about the benefit show I did, and this
really?
Was in 2006.
I didn't know that.
He interviewed me down at I was at South by Southwest, and it was like a whole page that articles in the Daily News. But then he came to the benefit, and he was still writing for the press, and you know how he would tear everything apart.
Yeah, he was a crazy guy.
Yeah, so he kind of like, you know.
Very smart.
Yeah, but he kind of, you know, I don't know, whatever the word you want to say. He wasn't as complimentary, because for the press, I guess he could write whatever he wanted, but for the Daily News, they reeled him in, you know. But he did kind of fuck up the article, because he said I was from Brooklyn, but I was from Queens.
Right.
Yeah.
So, but it was really funny, because when I was dating JR, like, he could get tickets to anything, and I was always like, because I was working really long hours. I was like really tired, but I remember he was really proud. Like when we went to see you,
really.
I wonder if he wrote about you at that time.
Maybe it was to impress me. He did a review on us on that CD. Actually, he liked everything, but he kind of said something like, "Why did you put Eleanor Rigby on it?" You know what I mean?
I love that song.
I know. I did too.
I know. That's funny because I remember him and I. Talking very, I mean, I remember him as part of that, and you know, of course, he was really involved. He knew, I mean, JR has like an encyclopedia knowledge about everything, so you know, he knew. I mean, I couldn't even like really discuss music with him in any way, so you were one of the few bands that you know we kind of both like he encouraged.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I always, I I mean, I think I have good taste in music, frankly.
Now, he wrote nice stuff, but like he always has to do that kind of zinger thing, you see.
Oh, yeah.
That's
well,
part
tell
of
me.
Style.
Listen, I dated the guy.
I hope he didn't do zingers to you like he did to bands.
Oh, I'm sure. He was. I remember what he used to say. He said something about that I was one of the few artists whose work he didn't hate.
Well, that's
that
cool.
Was high. That was high praise from JR.
Yeah.
Greg. I mean, you know, I have very fond. You know, we were friends for a long time. We just kind of lost touch. I was at his wedding, and
okay.
It's kind of after
so
he had
you
his
didn't
kid.
Have sour grapes.
Not at all.
Who
I think
who?
After he had his kid, he kind of
mellowed out.
Maybe, you know, I just really lost touch with them then. They were living in Weehawken, and I think having a kid was probably the best thing that ever happened to him. I don't know for sure, but I'm guessing that probably was a good thing, and he seems, that's my impression from the social media, that he loves being a dad.
I never joined that club yet. I don't think I will either.
Me either.
My
me
birthday's
either.
On Monday.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, 64. And I should have learned when I'm 64 and I don't know how to play it. Uh-huh. I'm doing this thing on Saturday, and I'm solo.
Where?
At the Irish Whiskey Bar in Astoria.
Oh, in Astoria.
Under the train L.
Yeah, so you live in Astoria now.
No, College Point my whole life. Same house.
Oh, really?
Same house. The house of my...
But you play in Astoria a lot.
Well, because we've been doing covers as well as the original. And a lot of places have their own drawer, so you don't have to bring that many people. And they actually pay you, which is a nice thing.
Oh, nice. So one of the things that I thought, besides the fact that you're a personal favorite of mine, but so... We established that, folks. Thank you for indulging me, too. But I love sharing this with you, and I know you're enjoying it. So, but one of the things about you that I thought was really pretty remarkable and really, really cool for a creative person, it really, you have what that is that we creative people really need, which is this kind of... I hate to say commitment because it's much bigger than the word commitment, but like you have really lived being in a band like your whole life. You've been in a band. We were doing the math before we went on the air, and it's been 37 years, and you haven't skipped any time, right?
No.
You've played consistently.
Yeah, because what happened was after I always wanted to, you know, I was going to be the great rock and roll, whatever it is, or star, whatever they call it back then. But I was going to, you know, I was trying to make it. I sure hell didn't want to work as a plumber. I just took that in high school, and when I graduated, I had to get a job. Anyway, I was doing that day job thing, and I was I was half-assed about it. Let's put it this way.
Half-assed about being in a band, you mean?
Well, you know, I would, like, blow off a rehearsal to go out on my boat or some other stupid thing.
That sounds good.
but, I mean, so, anyway, after my mother died, it was an eye-opener. I just realized if I was going to do this... Plus, she was really proud of me.
How old were you when you were there?
Well, I turned 25, but I mean, I should have been taking it. Well, for one thing, it was really hard as a keyboard player to put a band together because to play either a room had to have a piano, you couldn't.
Oh, I see.
Or you had to have a Fender Rhodes, or you just had to commit to playing an organ. And back in those days, everything was a Hammond B3. And, you know, it wasn't easy as a...
So you were 25 when your mother passed?
Yeah.
Was she sick for a long time or
She had cancer since I was like 10.
Oh, so you grew up with an ill mother?
Right. But she was a good mom. I mean,
you know.
Yeah, I mean, I remember one time some kid kind of smacked me, an older kid, and she found out about it, and she staggered down the block and kind of smacked the shit out of him, you know.
Good for her.
Yeah.
So did your brothers or sisters?
I have one of each, but... Yeah, we're kind of distant, one of those families.
But when you grew up, was
it? Oh, yeah. But my sister left like when I was like 15.
Wow.
She's
older?
Yeah, 6 years older, I think. And my brother, yeah, we're still in touch, me and my brother, but me and my sister.
Your sister aren't in touch. Was your family close when you were growing up?
Well, we were better. We were better than that. It's just that stupid things happen.
Did you have a good childhood?
Oh, yeah.
You seem like you really were family-oriented.
Yeah, no, my mom was great. My father was great. I got along good with my sister. My brother was always like the bad apple. But anyway, that's, you know, and there's an older brother who I never met who died when he was 7.
Oh,
but,
wow.
But long before,
oh, that's a big deal.
Well, that's long before I was born.
But it must have really affected your parents.
My mother still...
She could never get past that.
No.
No, never. What?
He died of, well, I think he had a convulsion when he was like 3 months. I mean, it's all much according to my mother.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like a vegetable. And I think he was in an institute and he caught pneumonia and he died. But back in those days, they probably knew this kid had no future, so they didn't, you know.
Yeah,
I mean,
well, whatever. That's really, yeah.
Yeah, it killed, so, but it still destroyed my, you know, my mom.
Oh,
we always talk
about
his birthday, but which I don't remember, actually.
No, but it must have been awful. Yeah.
I think he was born in 1939.
Wow.
And my parents got married. They were drunk at a... they were drunk at a St. Patrick's Day party, and they went into this minister's kitchen with their friends who had it all set up. Their friends were going to get married. And back then, you didn't have to do blood tests and all that stuff.
Right, right.
They had licenses, and they kept them hanging around like the minister had them. And after the friends got married, the minister's wife said to my parents, next. And they were both stewed off their ass, and they go, yeah, why not? And when her father was totally pissed, because she lied about her age, but and they had to get remarried in the church
later
on.
Did they know each other very well,
married? But my mother had, like, according to her, she actually had a couple of boyfriends here and there. And it was like a type, they were just going out, you know what I mean, type of thing. It wasn't like, they were, like, madly in love, and they said it would never last, and it did, up to 34 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, because my mother died when she was 64. And then she was married when she was 20.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, that must have been, so when your mother passed, that was were you very close to her?
Yeah. And I mean, you know, and of course, you know, when that type of thing happens, you regret certain things. You know, when you're younger, you're worried more about your friends and hanging out and all that stuff. And when she died, it just kind of like, you know, well, she was always sick. And you always thought, oh, she beat it again. Because, you know, every couple of years she had to go in for some other damn thing, and she beat it.
Right.
And when she, I don't know, it just...
Did it feel sudden when she passed?
No, because it was drooling. It started in May, and she died in August when she went in the last time. And she wound up with chemotherapy. And back then, you know, and at 78,
even
that was
now.
Still kind of new. Yeah, and she didn't know who I was for the last 3 weeks of my life.
Oh, I see. That must have been very, very difficult.
Yeah, it was horrible.
How was your dad? That must have been tough on him.
Yeah, but I he didn't want to recognize it. And
he didn't want to deal with it at
well,
all.
Well, he dealt with it. But, I mean, it was like you know, when my mother, it was really weird. I was in the hospital, and the one doctor, this is like towards, like right before they sent her home. It's like, has she responded to this? I said, no, whatever. And they would ask a question. And the guy looks at me, just closes the book. And he goes, well, nothing we can really do. This is Mount Sinai. You could take her home.
Oh, wow, yeah.
And my father was like, oh, mom's coming. Like, he was like, it was really weird. I mean, like, he was so happy that she was, but she was a vegetable and she was skinny and it was horrible. And she lasted a week and she died in the house, but. You know, but anyway,
that must have been rough as a kid because, like, you didn't have your dad to protect you in a way. You know,
well,
what I mean?
My father was great too, but my mom.
But I mean, still, like he wasn't dealing with it directly.
Oh, no. Maybe I'm saying it wrong. It's just that
emotionally. I mean, he probably dealt with it directly.
Well, I mean, when she did die, I mean, the guy broke down in the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I remember him saying to me how much he loved his.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
And the thing was. Like about a year before he died, or was it? See what happened after she died. You know, when you're a kid, you want to hang out on Christmas Eve instead of being home.
Of course.
Your parents would want you home.
But yeah.
Like, you know, anyway, so now I made sure every holiday I was with my father, and I made sure I took him out for father because it you lost one, and now you realize how important they are. But when you before that happens, you know, you kind of like don't give a shit, and you're growing up and you're self-centered, you know.
Well, that's what kids are for. You're supposed to feel secure with your parents and take them for granted. That's what you're supposed. That's what kids.
Yeah.
That's good, healthy upbringing.
I guess it was. But anyway, I made sure that I was there for my father, and I mean, we became like best friends. And you know, as more I got into the music thing, he put up with it. I mean, he really wanted to like go to Florida and sell the house, but he kept it. Because he knew I would be screwed because I had this real shit plumbing job. You know, non-union guys make nothing. I couldn't have, I mean, I would have had to cut rent. I mean, I paid him board, but I would have had to cut rent, studio time to rehearse a band. You know what I'm saying? And then try to record.
So he really stuck around because he really cared about your music and you, and he probably loved spending time with you.
Oh yeah, he showed up at clubs. So, I mean, that's why he got the nickname of Daddy Tapes because the band was Daddy Tapes,
and it was part of it.
Yeah, and he came home with a shirt that said Daddy Tapes on it one year. He used to go to Florida every couple of months, and he came home with the shirt that said Daddy Tapes. He loved it. He's the one. He put like the name of the tapes on the mailbox. You know, and he just. Yeah, he loved the whole thing.
You know, I want to play this because I'm glad you're telling the story because on your latest out, this is your latest. Is this your
latest? Yeah, that's 20. Well, that's not the latest. That came out in that's 25 by 30. It's basically like a
compilation of.
It's an anthology. It's a 28 page booklet in there.
Oh wow!
You can get it on CD, baby. And it's a 28 page booklet, and it tells, unlike the Beatles put their shit out first on their. First anthology, we put new songs and worked our way back all the way to us playing at Max's Live in 1981.
Wow.
But the booklet starts with the band starting, tells the whole story, and right to the present.
Yeah, which is what's so great. One of the things that's so great, besides the music, of course, but the history, like your band has a consistent history and story. But anyway, on this CD, which I actually downloaded off the internet, but I paid for it.
Thanks, Bob.
So now it's supposed to be recording. It's on play and record. And it's supposed to be doing it, see? But I don't know.
So that's your dad. I love that it's on there.
What happened was I bought him. You remember when those boom boxes were out with the big speakers?
Yeah.
I bought him one for Christmas. And he loved it. And I showed him how you got to. Record, you know, you got to hit the record and the play button to make it record, and you got to rewind, and then, you know, then it plays back. He was showing it off to someone. I think it was, I bet it was at the Daddy Tapes party. We used to have a party for him every year, which I still do, even though he's been gone.
Oh, that's great.
And I do that party at the house, and I have the benefit. But anyway, he was showing it, and I guess he must have held the buttons down, talked into it, and he didn't realize that you had to rewind it and hit play again, because there's more to it. At the end of the song Glass, we put both ends, then he'll go, I don't know, it must be going, I'm talking enough into it, because he didn't realize that he's recording himself again, and it was...
Oh, that's funny.
Well, I was so destroyed when he died, he died suddenly, I found him on the floor.
Oh, wow. How old were you then?
Well, I was 33.
Oh, but, so that was...
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't a little
like
kid.
8 years after your mom or something. Like
but I mean, I thought he was good till his 80s, you know? So the thing was, the weirdest thing was making the house mine. It was... Because I felt like I was just being a watchman for my father.
Right.
You know, it took about a year. But anyway, I had the hit thing up on top of the refrigerator. I took it down and saw the cassette, and I rewound it. And to hear that, it was such a, it was just his voice, yeah.
Wow.
So it wound up years later when I wrote the song called Glass, which is on, the fourth CD. And I just, because that's kind of like a little bit of an artsy-fartsy song. So I got the idea of putting this tape on, you know, my father's voice before it, then the other piece I found after it.
So it's like a lead into the song.
Yeah, if you have Glass, actually, you know what? You could have this one, too, while we're at it.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. I'm getting so many gifts here today. I'm going to take pictures of all this. I've gotten this. Bill's given me a second CD. He already gave me one. And this hat, which I made him sign.
Wow.
But I want to do a station ID. And I also, I want to remind people that they're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn. This is Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit. Thanks for listening. I'm having a really fascinating conversation and some good music with Bill Pop of Bill Pop and the Tapes. And I think, Rebecca, this artist friend of mine, Rebecca, is doing this really cool thing, a benefit for her lobster porn tour. And she told me she was going to call in. So I was thinking this would be a good time for her to call in. And look at that. There she is. Rebecca?
Hey, yes.
Hey, we were just talking about you. How about that?
Awesome.
So I'm really excited about your lobster porn tour. I mean, and which is so, well, you know what, I'll post some information. There's actually a great show that we did together that isn't really, well, would certainly have people understand how crazy you are, how like outrageous and extreme. So tell us about the benefit.
Yeah, so I'm doing a benefit because I'm about to go shoot a new lobster porno in Berlin with, you know, with Andrea Merkel and all.
Yeah, right.
And, yeah, you know.
Because she would look great in one of your lobster costumes. I would love to see that.
She
would.
She and I have the same resting bitch face for the same right now. So I love her so much, you know. So I'm really looking forward to meeting her. And yeah, so I'm hosting this lobster porn benefit party at Brooklyn Bazaar on Thursday, June 8th, at 150 Greenpoint Ave in Greenpoint, 7 p.m. to 12 a.m. And you can also get tickets on my website, rebogallery.com/ticket.
I'll post it all on my Facebook page.
Cool. What I'm doing is I'm actually screening all the lobster porn films that I've made so far. They're like improvisational sexual dramas where we all dress up as lobster and go at it together. I've made them all over the world, including Greece and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to screen all of the shorts that I've made so far, which ends up being about a feature-length film length. And then I'm going to have a lobster sexitation raffle, followed by some lobster lap dances and a lobster porn photo booth where everyone can dress up in lobster costumes and get their photo taken with me.
Whoa!
It is going to be a lot of lobster fun. And this venue is so crazy. It was an old Polish nightclub, and there's like these little nooks in there. There's like these karaoke rooms that have brown velvet ceilings and mirrored walls and red leather couches for the lobster sexitation to occur on. It's just going to be so crazy. It's my
sexy
lobster den of iniquity.
Wow, that sounds amazing. And the tickets are only like $15 in advance, right?
Yeah.
$20,
yeah.
Which is not a lot for a benefit to and all that stuff. And there's going to be drinks and stuff like that, right?
Yeah, and there's...
Are the lap dances extra?
You have to tip the lap dancers.
Oh, all right. I think that's fair.
You know,
I think that's fair.
Tips.
Yeah.
And also, it's just really a lot of fun because there's performance, there's a movie screening, and you also get to play dress up with me. So it's very interactive. There'll be some dance music on if people need to get their lobster dance on. So it's just going to be fun.
And
you know?
It's really important to note that all the you make all the costumes, and they're highly original and incredibly sexual, very sexual.
Well,
I have there'll definitely be some dildos, right?
Yeah, I mean, basically, real lobster men have double dicks. They have two dicks, so I have so many pairs.
How many dicks do you have, Bill?
Well, one. Let's take it older.
You're not a lobster.
No. I wish I was. I got a picture of a couple of crabs fucking, by the way.
Oh, good. We'll need that later.
He said he only has one. He should come to my party, and he can have at least two.
Well, if you go to... Yeah, okay, yeah. Well,
I think my girlfriend should be much happier.
Yeah, right. Rebecca, I love you, and I admire you, and I think it's going to be the most awesome evening ever, and I want to thank you for calling in.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, great to talk to you.
Thanks for the great
tunes. See you Thursday.
Helping me feel better in these times.
All right, bye-bye.
All right, take care, bye.
That sounds like fun.
I know, doesn't it? Rebecca's awesome. Her work is really amazing.
You know what happened? Where I keep this boat, one time in the fall, they had the crabs, and there was two of them that were mating, and I filmed it.
Oh, really? Oh, well, no. Well, you got to mail it to me. We'll do that after we're off the air, because your story about... So did you, were you always, like, as a kid, were you always, like, really musically oriented?
Yeah, but I was more fantasy about it than... I didn't realize the work involved.
What do you mean?
Well, you know, like, you got to write songs, but I didn't realize, or play, or sing. I mean, I should have listened to my parents, maybe even taken voice as a kid, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just certain, I think I wanted the fame without the work.
Oh, interesting. Really? Because your career seems exactly the opposite.
Well, yeah, but that was after when I was 25. No, I dove into it. I made that the center. I think music, to do it, you got to kind of make it the center of your life and let things revolve around that.
Wow.
Meaning, like, that's, like, you can't have, you know, oh, I'm going to go to some party tomorrow.
Right.
And I'll just blow off a rehearsal because of that. Or, you know, this came up and I'm not going to, you know what I'm saying?
So when your mother passed, that's really what changed. It's an eye-opener. So how did that affect you? Like, what?
Well, I'll give you an example. Like for one thing, back then, I didn't have a band. Well, I was always trying to get things out of the living room. And, you know, I was working with people that really weren't committed either. And so I just had to dive into it. So I didn't really know where to start. So I started, you know, I found that there were showcases. Like, I used to play this place called the Monokai in Bayside. But I didn't want to go into the city because it was a drag going into. I didn't know anyone. I didn't have to drive. I had to take trains and everything. So after she died, I said, I'm doing that.
Yeah, but was it like she, did your mom try to impress on you that like your music was she somebody who advocated for your music? Did she make you feel?
She would tell me that you weren't doing it seriously. Why aren't you practicing that? Why aren't you doing that?
So it kind of like she was the one who really wanted you to be serious about it, and you internalized that when she wasn't there to do that for you. Right, is that what you mean, kind of?
Yeah, because she said basically, I mean, you know, you should be doing this and doing that, and I wasn't. I mean, she was really proud of what I did.
Mm-hmm.
Like she, like when I would play it, it used to drive me nuts too. Because I hate, you know, you hate when parents brag about you as a kid.
Oh, she used to brag about you. God. Oh, that's adorable. Like, I don't know because I never had that problem.
She would ask me to sing. She'd go, "Oh, Bill, why don't you play that new one you wrote?" And then there'd be friends of hers there or whatever, and as you're playing, you hear, you know, he never had a lesson. And you hear all this stuff. And like, you're like, you know, because when you're younger, you don't want to hear that shit, you know, because it's totally uncool.
Yeah, I guess.
That's a bit of my.
I get it. I get it. So did you ever think of going to college? You never went to college,
well,
right?
I hated school. And the only reason I went to a trade school was to get out of it easiest. I read like shit to this day. If I didn't use, my drummer has to proof me, read a lot of emails.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I mean, but I got through it all, you know.
Right, obviously.
Yeah.
So did your
As a trades guy, you know, you learn certain words, and that's what you have to write because there's certain words. I mean, I could spell, but not.
I bet you're a good plumber. Were you good at it?
I did it. Yeah, yeah. I do.
You
I
must be pretty good.
I mean, I did what I had to do. You know.
Yeah,
but
you were capable of doing.
Oh yeah,
that's what
I did.
I'm
boilers,
saying.
Bathrooms,
a lot of people,
all that garbage.
That's not that easy. Are you a licensed?
No. But I worked.
But you know how to do it.
I had to take a city test, which was almost equal to.
Okay.
To a license.
So yeah. Well, whatever. Yeah, you're certified.
And I worked. I never worked for anyone but a licensed plumber.
Oh, and I see you would work for. I get it. I get it.
So
yeah, you're trained and certified. All that stuff.
Yeah.
And I was going to ask you about, was anybody musical in your family? Like, where did the music come from?
My mother would sing to me as a kid.
And that's it?
Yeah. Well, she used to always say that when she was younger, she wanted to take a piano. She played piano by ear when she was a kid. That's how they got the piano.
Wow.
The year they got me the drums. My father and my sister, they chipped in and they bought her this Thomas piano. And it was, when she tried to play from all these cancer drugs and stuff, her arms would swell. And it's so it sat there and it didn't, you know, it just sat there. A friend of mine showed me how to play Hey Jude. And that's what encouraged me to play. I took the same three chords and, you know, wrote one of these songs that really sucked, you know what I mean? But I thought it was the greatest thing in the world.
So you're completely self-taught.
Yeah, I took lessons 10 years after the fact, and it was some joint in Flushing, that music store. And the woman didn't know what to do with me because I could play. So she put me on book one, and that didn't work out because I would hear the note before I would play it, you see.
Right.
And then
this
guy came along for the same school. He taught me blues riffs, which was kind of cool. But then he quit, and I never took him again.
Oh. So was it kind of unusual your parents were like, wow, this kid's really talented? Was it a surprise?
They were supportive.
Supportive.
I mean, they put up with it. You know what I mean? Like, you know, like even the old my father, the old man, he put up with it. Was you know,
what did your father? How did your parents earn a living? What did they?
Oh,
do?
My father was a I guess he did numerous jobs, but he got on with a printing company. I guess around 1953, and he became a union printer.
Mm-hmm.
Then, right as I was, a year before I graduated, they downsized.
Oh.
They were moving. Remember, all back in the day, all the companies used to go to Jersey. They didn't want to deal
happened.
With New York
yeah,
unions.
Yeah, that happened. Yeah,
he lost his gig at 59. So, and they couldn't place him at the union at the time, and he wound up going from a decent job to like a guard's job.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why when I got out.
But he had a job.
And my mother was a nurse, but the cancer knocked her out. Because whatever happened to her, she lost her equilibrium. You know, go back then, you were a guinea pig.
Yeah.
You know, you tried anything, you know.
So what I wanted to ask you, like, about the music business and for those young, hungry fantasy musicians out there. So what's your ideas about the music business and your relationship to it over the years? Like, what do you think about it?
I think you got to give it all you got. And I also think you should have some type of a day gig that has some type of future, but yet will allow you, which is very complicated, to pursue your music.
Mm-hmm.
Like my old boss, before I got on with the city, you know, I couldn't walk out of some customer's house and say, well, I guess you don't need a toilet tonight because I'm going to go play CB's.
Yeah, right.
So I would tell them, that like 3 or 4 days in advance, look, I can't stay.
Oh, I see.
And I thought he was the greatest thing since sliced bread because he put up with the bullshit.
Oh, I see.
Because most people who don't play, see, I was always caught in the middle of two worlds.
Yeah.
The musicians didn't like the fact that I had a buck in my pocket, and the plumbers thought I was a fucking idiot because I'd walk out on overtime.
Right.
And I did no side work.
Right, right, right.
So, you know,
yeah,
like I would hear the shit in the morning, like, how much money did you make playing CB's last night? You know, and I'd say, well, whatever.
But yeah. It seems like your path as a musician has really managed to sidestep. Like, you seem like you have your path. That
right.
has nothing to do, that's solid, that isn't,
right.
It, that isn't, you know, waived by the music business and other things, right?
Well, I mean, at my stage of the game, no one's going to come along and come up with a record contract or anything. I don't even know what it means today. Cause
but
of all
yeah,
this internet
don't you think
thing.
The music business has changed?
Well,
like, not for, I mean, I think, you know, like, what's popular, what gets played? I don't understand any of this. So
yeah, it's kind of weird. I mean, I'm in it, and I produce records still, you know, for my our own band, and I push it. It's hard to get college airplay because I think now the labels are it's where you could get on, like a label would break an artist on college, but there'd still be enough room for someone unsigned. Now
right.
no room for anyone on.
Yeah, top. That's the problem,
and,
right?
And the or thing is, well, that's why these internet things are great.
Yeah,
but and hopefully it takes off. And yeah, I mean the thing is, without a major label, anyone could get my stuff on CD Baby, and I have all like 7 records there. Matter of fact, I just sold one. They always send you an email. Some guy in Numbnuts, Nebraska, bought the fucking. He bought. Pop Hits the 60s. That's an EP we
put out. I think people in
out.
Japan listen to this show, which is weird. I know, it's funny how you hear
do
that.
You know Alan Merrill?
He was Alan
a big,
Merrill.
Yeah,
sounds
he was
familiar.
A big star in Japan, actually. He still plays, yeah. I just had to throw that in. He was in a band called Arrow. They were like teen stars.
So you have a band, and you can see, you have a great history of your band on the website. So, all the details are there. But your band has changed members over the years and stuff.
Yeah, but
like
we've
that.
Been the same members now since 2001 without a change.
Really? Wow,
yeah.
That's
I mean, Mary,
awesome.
Our bass player, she's been really getting into a lot of bluegrass stuff,
mm-hmm.
and she's been kind of prioritizing that because she gets to sing more where
right.
it's in her
so
style.
So what's that like, having a relationship with a band that long?
Well, we don't really hang out all that much together.
It's really a business.
Nah,
it's work. And,
yeah,
and you work together.
We,
maybe
we
not
all
a
love
business.
The music. That's the thing. We
yeah.
all, like even the covers we do, everybody uh-huh. likes them.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like, I mean, sometimes you got to do certain covers that will entertain. But I'm not a big fan of Brown Eyed Girl, but I'll sing it. But on the other hand, like we just learn Let It Be, and everyone loves Let It Be.
And do you do most of the writing?
Yeah. Well, Jerry's a writer in his own right. And he has a CD. He had a band for a while called The Virgin Mary.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess his CD is still floating around. I mean, he's pushing it. But he does a, you know, and he works with another, you know, band. Well, this girl, Kit. She has a.
There must be really good chemistry, though. I mean, for whatever reason, well, however it works.
Because we have, it's no out of pocket to anyone, and we actually make money. We play.
Oh, you do?
Know?
Yeah, yeah. I'm not.
We get
yeah,
paid.
Yeah,
we're not breaking the bank.
Yeah, but you get, it's a money making. Yeah, and it's your music.
And we
actually
play for free a lot, you know.
Yeah,
I mean,
but yeah, like
if you're doing
like
the original thing,
like any performer.
Yeah.
If you're, I mean, making money, most. Let's say playing for free is the first step, but a lot of people, you know, making it to the second step where you're getting paid is pretty good.
But you got to do, the way it is now, I guess, unless you really have, well, you still need the major label. You still need the booking agent.
Yeah,
and
you need a booking
agent.
The
real
right?
draw, and then you could, you know.
Yeah.
And so, we haven't gotten past that. The other
so
part.
Are you married?
Nah.
Do you have a girlfriend?
Yeah, same girl for Christ, going on 8 years.
Eight years?
Her name is Gumja, very sweet girl.
What's her name?
Gumja.
Gumja.
Chu. Yeah, I met her. She's Korean. I met her in Flushing, actually.
Oh, nice.
At the YMCA in the pool.
In the pool? In a bathing suit, huh?
Well, that's where you know what you get.
I like
that. Surprise shit, you know? I'm telling you, if she ever dumped me, I would never go back. You know, don't even waste your time in a bar. I think it's the worst place to find anyone. If I had to go get another girlfriend, I would go right back, you know, to the pool.
Cool. Yeah, that sounds
it's like,
great.
It's like going to a singles bar and the girls are showing up in panties and bras, you know? I mean, but you got to be cool. I mean, you can't come up like a
You can't
creep.
Just go like, you look
no,
great in
no,
that
no,
in
no.
that,
you
in
gotta,
that racing
you gotta
outfit.
You got to start the old bullshit. Oh, gee, the water's cold today, you know? You can't give off, you know, you can't make like you're hitting on anyone. Just
no,
gotta,
no. I think
good,
that
otherwise you get
authenticity
thrown out of the pool.
Seems like really who you are. I don't think you would be taken in that way.
No, but I mean, still, I mean, you don't
so
know
So have
people.
You ever been married?
Nah, I proposed to one girl. This is the best one. Matter of fact, the album you like, Stone to Throw, a lot of songs on it was written for her.
Ah.
We went out in 91, and she was younger than me. And when her parents accepted our relationship, I guess they figured he's older, but he's got a house.
Oh, how much older? Future.
Well, I was 17 years older.
Oh, that's
her.
A lot, yeah.
I was like 37, and she was 21.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah. So,
but,
yeah.
But her parents were cool. And then, you know, after the first few months, you're walking on eggs thinking, oh, she's going to dump me any minute. But when it went on past 6 or 7 months, you start thinking it's real. Anyway, when I did get dumped, it kind of took its, you know, to heart. Matter of fact, on that album, the song, When I Met You, I wrote for her. Stone to Throw, I wrote, which for her. Just Say Love. What else?
I love that song.
The Sky is Blue, I wrote for her.
Wow, that's so romantic to have a guy writing songs for you.
Yeah, it didn't
and
work.
And then she
though.
Dumped
you.
You
know, I never got laid on a song. You know, I never,
really?
Yeah, no one. I you know, maybe because for one thing, I'm nothing to write home about. Yeah, I'm only 5'4".
Oh, you're really charming.
Well, now I am.
Charismatic. I don't know.
Yeah,
you
well,
know,
I got that nursing home thing
appealing.
Going.
You're now, appealing. You're appealing for sure.
But
ladies.
I mean, but I mean, you know.
Well, you don't need ladies.
Yeah. Well, I don't have that hot rock and roll image, you know.
Well,
what I mean?
That's you know. Well, there is that. There
you know,
is
used
that.
To drive me nuts. A little bit when we had the original tapes together in the '80s. Our bass player used to always get the girls, and he was the biggest pain in the ass. But he couldn't keep them because they saw through it, and they would dump them anyway. Yeah.
I was going to ask you. So your girlfriend now, does she a musician? Does she come to
no,
see your?
No, she loves belly dancing. That's what she
really?
Does.
Yeah. That is so cool.
Yeah, yeah. She takes a lot. I keep telling her. Why don't you try to, you know, she does, like, what do you call them, shows with the schools.
Yeah.
That she takes a class
yeah.
with. But I said, I know a few people I could probably get her to do, like, a thing when she, you know, when they perform.
We got to get her out to Bushwick. Can she, could is it possible to have her perform with your band? Have you ever thought of that?
I spoke to her. Oh, no, I'm not performing. I'm like.
She doesn't want to perform.
She does the school things, does these shows. I'd like to do that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, but my music isn't right for belly dancing. But you know what? There's a band called, what the hell are they called? Too Many Lawyers? They had a different name. But they actually have belly dancers that do stuff. The guy's a friend of mine.
Really? Let's book it. Let's book it. Let's get it. Your band, her band, that band, and just her.
Yeah.
That would be awesome.
But I think, yeah, but I mean, she's got a little.
She's not really
She loves it. She goes, takes her classes every week.
Anyway, that's an awesome pursuit under any circumstance.
I mean, she's got a day gig too, you know.
What does she do?
She's a nurse, believe it or not.
Oh, wow. Yeah. She sounds really interesting. But she comes to see you a lot?
In the beginning, I mean, because, I think she don't drink. She's got an allergy to alcohol.
Oh, yeah.
Which is good, because I don't need anybody to encourage me.
Right. None of us do.
Yeah.
I want to make sure that, we got 4 minutes left, and I want to make sure that I get to play another song. I just saw something really horrible on my phone.
Oh, sorry.
So, about our world. So anyway, I want to finish this with all the dignity that we have here, which is plenty. And so I was going to play Sidewalk Dance,
you know,
which
I wrote
also
that about
love.
Brooklyn, by the way. You know?
Did?
Well, I was working in these horrible neighborhoods back then. That's what inspired it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because the Valley of Stone, all that. Because I burnt out building. I was working in
Okay, be quiet, because I really want to get a chance to play this, because I love this song. And I also want to just, I'm going to post all this stuff on my Facebook page, along with the fact that this replays tomorrow at 8 a.m. So you can just go to my Facebook page. It's open. But I want to remind everybody that they should go see you on Saturday.
Well, I'm playing at the Irish Whiskey Bar.
And at the Cooper Square 3rd Avenue Festival.
On the 10th.
2 p.m. And your website is
on the 16th.
Bowery and your website is billpop.com?
Yep, billpop.com.
So here we go, another one of my very, very favorite songs in the whole world, Sidewalk Dance. Thanks for listening. You can always write to me at Dr. Lisa at RadioFreeBrooklyn.org. All right, have a great day. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Well, I feel good, yeah. The sun is high, the night awaits. Summers burn like coals on fire. So you can dance now with your sneakers on. We can go home. Down on the streets through this valley of stone. We'll dance if we want to. Dance as we need to. Can't tell us not to dance. So we do our sidewalk dance. Sidewalk dance with you. Sidewalk dance. Well, I don't care now what they say. We could dance our lives away. While the shy guys watch by with desires. Let's just spread a dance at all.